Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Aki and Bree are here. Jacob will pop in when he decides to. How are you two doing?
Pretty good.
Pretty good, yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. I got some stressors off my list.
Yay! Added some stressors.
I got a new-to-me car.
Ooh.
So I posted a picture in the Discord for everybody under Bree's Adventures of Bree.
It could go vroom vroom.
Yeah, it goes vroom vroom. I tested it out with some Bear McCreary music in the CD player, and you know, tried to get it to go pretty fast.
You could change the CD.
I can change the CD. Yes.
What are you gonna do?
I don't know. Supposedly, I can also hook my phone up to my car. Apparently, Nissan has like weird things where you have to like have a special app or something. And once you have the special app, you have to wait for them to approve you or something that you actually own the car. So it's like a 2-day waiting period before I can hook my phone up to my car. I'm kind of annoyed.
Via Bluetooth normally?
No, you have to use their app. That's it's like a safety feature that they have.
Fucking dumb.
Yeah, it's a whole thing. I have to feed my cat a treat. She caught a mouse.
Cat time.
Come here, Teak. Come get a treat.
Who redeemed the points?
Injury sent me a text from upstairs saying that she deserved a treat because she caught a mouse.
Aww.
So,
isn't the mouse her treat?
No, because it's a fake mouse.
You know who else deserves a treat today?
I do.
No, not you. You never deserve anything.
The viewers. Listeners. Yeah.
Yes. Today is our streamiversary on Twitch. Technically, it was last Thursday, but they let me reschedule it because of the whole getting a flu thing. Today's officially the streamiversary. And to celebrate, I got my hands on a spare key for Scott Pilgrim EX. We did not get to review this one, so I had to manually track this one down, but I wanted something fun to give to the viewers, so get your entries in. If you're listening to this on YouTube or MP3 or Spotify or whatever, fucked up.
Yeah, you missed fucked out. Up.
You did miss out. And of course, Aki enters. Jesus. I hope you lose, Aki. Y'all,
I probably will, realistically speaking.
Gone when I draw the winner.
Yes, I will.
And you're not a sub.
Probably not, no.
You'll have to fix that if you want to keep that key.
Otherwise, it'll be a reroll.
Yep, it'll be a reroll. Oh, Aki won. She has 10 minutes to claim it. Where is she? In the middle of the air. Uh-oh.
No internet there. Not unless you pay.
Sucks for her. Yeah. So yeah, we're giving away a copy of that. So hang out through chat. You got to be here when we do the drawing, which will be after the show. So you got to hang out this whole night. Kind of sucks, doesn't it? But we'll do something different during the music. So at least you have that for you. Should we talk some news? Because there was some news this week.
Yeah, there was definitely some news.
GDC's going on.
Yeah.
I didn't pay too much attention because not much really appealed to me this year. But I think the big thing is that Microsoft has been coming out with more and more details about the Project Helix console, which they confirmed will play your PC games and your Xbox console games. It will be a dual platform item where it's Xbox console and PC storefronts. I'm hearing mixed things that it might be like a dual boot kind of system, one to console mode, one to Windows mode. I don't know if that's legit or if that's just bullshit. But it has my attention again.
Yeah.
The fact that they're still in on having a console brand and a console presence.
Same, yeah.
Yeah.
My big hesitation is really going to be the price, especially in a two-gamer household. I want to stay current for the sake of streaming and doing reviews and all that, but are we going to be able to afford two of them for the household to keep current, or are we going to have to only get one and then wait?
I'm thinking it'll be a one and wait kind of situation.
Yeah.
I know there's rumors going around about price, which are all unfounded rumors, by the way. There's zero confirmation on price for this thing. I wouldn't be shocked if it's a grand.
I wouldn't either.
I think the people saying 1,200 or higher are kind of out of their mind, but I could see it being 1,000. I think if they go any higher than that, there's no way it's going to do anything, but... Mm-hmm. I think even a grand is way too much to ask for in this day and age with how much everybody is struggling, but we shall see.
I hope that it comes with good hard drive space, unlike previous consoles.
I'm guessing.
Would you like me to tell you how that? Yeah, maybe. I'm expecting 1 to 2 terabytes. And that's
I could see
any more than that. I don't think it'll be any more than that because why would they give us any memory, especially when memory prices are out of control?
I mean, 2 terabyte isn't horrible.
When there are games that regularly come out, like 2 or 3 of them a year, that one game can fill up a tenth of that space. That's not very much. Anymore.
2 or 3 a year. You want to try that again?
Yeah.
How about a month?
There's 100-plus gig games that come out every month.
MLB The Show is 112. That just comes out tonight.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. Okay, and you still think 2 is acceptable? I don't.
Yes, I do. I think 2 is acceptable for a general use situation. For us, no. General use, of course.
We're
the fringe cases. We got to remember, we're the fringe cases. We are not the average user by any means whatsoever. Final Fantasy 16's 130, Final Fantasy 7's 110, Diablo sitting at 128, Forza Horizon 5's sitting at 172, so I'm sure 6 is going to be over 100. There's big games. They come out all the time. It's not just like, it's not just November's big game month or something.
Fair.
The other big thing with the Project Helix and Xbox GDC situation is that the rumor mills are abuzz that the backward compatibility program might see some kind of return to life. I don't think it's going to be what we want.
No, I thought we got a confirmation that they were doing some.
There's zero confirmation.
There was a tweet that there was going to be some kind of revival for the 25th anniversary, but all it promised was that some iconic games would be on the list, and how we play them might be different was kind of the insinuation.
Yeah,
so it could be
new backwards compatible games, old favorites in new ways.
Yeah, it could be like new enhanced versions of games that are already on the list. It could be more compatibility for the ROG Ally. Like, we just have to wait and see, I guess.
The thing I'm hearing is that it is console compatibility on PC.
Yeah, that could be.
Mm.
That's what I'm hearing. I don't think they're going to add new games to the list. I hope I'm wrong. I absolutely hope I'm wrong. There's so many Activision games they could add. We had a whole hour conversation about this on the last episode, if you want to jump back and listen to that episode with Ryan. I also love the fact that people are spreading his website as an official Microsoft site.
Oh, yeah.
There's websites claiming it's an official site because nobody knows how to read an About Me page. that says this is a fan site and not at all affiliated with Microsoft.
Yep. You think we would
reading
have
is hard.
Yeah, do you think we'd have so many conspiracy theorists if people had brains in their head? Come on now.
So, yeah, I sincerely hope we see another batch added to the list of games. It's been 5 years. It would be nice to have another batch of Activision and maybe some other big titles that never made it, like Eternal Sonata, Magna Carta 2, Army of 2, the 40th Day, shit like that.
And I would love if Eternal Sonata was back compat.
I am not holding my breath, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Just yeah. How they worded it concerns me.
Yeah.
Play in new ways. Try this new AI version of fucking Fusion Frenzy.
Yeah, I'm good. I don't know what that means. Yeah.
I hope it's good, but I have learned to temper my expectations.
Yep.
Another surprise little bit of news. Bravely Default, Flying Fairy HD. Surprise, it's on Xbox. Tonight.
Oh.
Now you can get it. $40.
Very nice. Right.
Came out tonight on Series and PC. $39.99 on sale for $31.99 for the first 2 weeks, I believe, for Game Pass members. The big shock, it cool is Shadow not drop. On PlayStation.
It isn't?
No.
Oh, wow.
Nope. This came out tonight for Xbox and Xbox PC, Series and PC. That's nothing awesome. On PlayStation. Maybe later down the line. I don't know. It's like when we got Octopath and they didn't, and then they got Octopath 2 and we didn't.
Yeah. That was weird.
And then we got each other's. So, PlayStation Plus game catalog update for March 17th. A big slabo games joining. Warhammer 40K Space Marine 2.
Nice.
Hell yeah. Madden 26. Good for the sports fans. Persona 5 Royal and Persona 5 Royal Ultimate Edition on PS4.
Yeah, hell yeah. That's awesome.
Blasphemous 2.
Not bad.
Okay.
Metal Eden.
Nice.
Lord of the Rings Return to Mora.
Hmm.
And Astroneer.
Ooh.
I don't know that one.
Oh.
Astroneer is cool.
Solid month of games hitting on the 17th. And then Premium gets one with Tekken 5 Dark Resurrection from the PSP. Yay.
Oh, that's a game. That's for sure.
Sure is. Something else Sony's doing is catching a lot of attention, where they have started introducing dynamic pricing or targeted pricing to their store, where people who have spent more money on games over the years are getting worse discount prices than lower spenders.
They're also changing prices of some games. They haven't fully pushed something like that out, but apparently one game was like $27 and they bumped it up to $30.
Yeah, the sale.
Oh.
Sale price. It's $26.99 or $29.99.
Oh.
Yeah. I think that was Red Dead.
No idea.
I don't know.
Reminds me of like the surge pricing for Wendy's drive-thru or something.
Yeah, I think that shit should be completely illegal.
It should be.
Yeah.
I think you get a price and that's the fucking price. Unless your manufacturing process changes. But if it's just a different time of day and you want to charge more because you can, no, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. I'll just put it lightly, though. Silent Hill 2 Remake has hit 5 million players worldwide.
Yeah, that's awesome. That was a good game.
And then the last bit of news I have is that global sales for Pokemon Pokopia have already hit 2.2 million in 4 days.
Wow.
Whoa.
That's thing has been flying off of shelves. Both this and Resident Evil at Requiem have been facing massive physical copy shortages, which shows demand for physical is still out there. Yeah, it's cool that this is kind of blowing up out of nowhere. I didn't really have any interest in it, but with everyone talking about how it's very Animal Crossing-ish, maybe I'll look into it.
Even
I just got a go live notification for Pokopia from someone on my list. That's funny.
Even I'm somewhat interested in Pacopia. It actually looks legitimately kind of cute.
Yeah, that's my news. Aki, what do you have?
Okay, Koei Tecmo is partnering with an AI company. From what I read on this article, it seems like they're planning to use it to basically make it to where writers don't have jobs anymore. Because it seems like what they're trying to do is get dialogue to be made with AI. So, you know,
why do people want this? Like, I see everyone saying, I want to have interactive conversations that could go anywhere. Just tell me where the fucking dungeon is and let me go. I don't want to have a 7-hour conversation about your made up AI life. I don't give a fuck about you as an NPC. Tell me where the dungeon is.
See, I want to have conversations. I just want to have conversations with someone who actually knows how the English language fucking works. That's what I want to have conversation with. Not an AI that's just like, this usually comes after the letter A, so...
Have you been on the internet? You know most people don't know spelling and grammar these days, right?
I know, but writers do. That's why gross. I want to deal with writers.
Do you know how many writers don't know proper spelling and grammar these days?
That's I mean, that Last Dragon Age proved that, but yes.
How many writers like to overuse words like unique?
I fucking hate you. I don't even say that in real life anymore because I hate that word so much because of the show.
I know.
Everywhere horrible. I hear it now, I giggle.
Every time I hear it, I just think, would you please pick a new fucking word?
The best part is we'll be watching wrestling. And because so many people from the show or from my Discord group have joined the show to do reviews, someone in wrestling will say unique and someone will just be like, unique.
I hate that.
I fucking love it. It's so good. It's spreading. I love it.
Then there's also, this is tangentially related. One of the co-founders of Dark Horse Comics has been ousted by Embracer Group. Mike Richardson, he's been there for 40 years. He was one of the co-founders and the last of them there. And they got rid of him.
Damn.
So, you know, sucks. Probably because they wanted to make more money or want to sell off stuff would be my guess, because that's usually why they fire people.
We don't know.
And then Epic is raising the price of Fortnite V-Bucks because this thing that makes them billions of dollars a year, they need to increase it to help pay the bills. If this makes you billions of dollars a year in profit and that's not enough to pay your bills, get the fuck out. You're too stupid to be part of this entire existence, even, to be quite
frank. I have a
button
for their excuse.
What a crock of shit that was!
Exactly.
I do not, for one second, believe that they need to raise their V-Buck prices, which in turn kills more of the value of Game Pass Ultimate, since you get less V-Bucks now with your forced Fortnite subscription.
Yep.
I don't for one second believe that they need the money with how many people play that game and how many people spend money on that game.
I want to know what bills they have to cover, because last year they made over
all the licensing.
Yeah, last year they made over $8 billion in profit.
They have bills. A lot of licensing.
They don't have
bills.
$8 point something billion in bills.
No. They're just greedy and they want more money. We all know this.
They can all go right to fuck themselves land.
The perk in Game Pass went from 1,000 to 800.
Disgusting. Yeah,
you can't even buy two songs anymore. Isn't that gross?
That's about right.
$8 used to be able to buy four songs, and now you can't buy two with $8.
Yeah.
It's fucked up. Hate you, Epic.
And
that's
all my news.
You ruined rhythm gaming
for me. Yep. That's all my news. Just shitty companies being shitty, basically.
Yay. Bree, what do you got?
Is laying people off at the four studios that worked on Battlefield 6 to, quote, better align with what matters.
You cut out at the very beginning there. Who was laying people off?
EA.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, they made a record-breaking game.
What matters most to the community or some shit like that. So, you know, there's more people being shitty. Let's see. Hawked, a third-person online shooter game, is closing its servers on September 7th of this year. The game has also been delisted as of March 11th, making the once-replay game unplayable for most.
Yay.
So, yeah, if you didn't get it, you're too late. Sorry I couldn't get that news to you faster. More interesting, lighter news. At some point last week, it was reported that on Xbox, there were more people playing TCG Card Shop Simulator than Resident Evil Requiem or Marathon.
That brings me great joy.
Yeah. I've watched some streams of that, and it seems like a good one. Probably helps that it was on Game Pass. So yeah. Yeah. Back to shittier news. White House Press Department put out another video more licensed material celebrating their airstrikes on Iran. This time it included Marvel and Star Wars, just to name two bigger franchises, but it also had Halo. Steve Downes, the actor behind Master Chief, has publicly stated he wants his voice removed from the, quote, juvenile war porn that was that advertisement, and other actors have said similar about this latest video. So, game adjacent there.
Oh, yep. did you guys see the weather forecast? It was like 80 degrees today, and tomorrow we're supposed to get snow. And if it's going to be mixed weather, I just want to say fuck ice. Driving in it sucks. Walking on it sucks. Just fuck ice in every way.
Yep.
There you go. In every way and every format.
Indeed. Yep.
And the last bit of news I have is a little bit long, so bear with me, because it's Ball Squad news.
Hold on. Oh, I barely even pushed the button. Damn.
He knew that was coming.
Oh.
Zen Studios announced some things today regarding their Pinball FX and related pinball IPs. For starters... Future Pinball FX and Pinball M releases will no longer launch on PS4 and Xbox One.
Ooh.
As well as season support will be ending on those platforms. This also extends to Zen Pinball World. Previous purchases will remain available, so you'll still be able to play the things that you already have. Next thing on that list, the World Cup soccer table from Zen will be delisted on April 30th due to licensing reasons.
That makes sense.
You'll still be able to play it if you purchase it before then. It is also a part of one of the Williams bundles, which they will rework for future purchases.
Hmm.
Yeah. And
those are good tables, by the way. Make sure you grab it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've got some more cumbersome news to deal with. They will be rebranding a little bit, so things will be unified under the Pinball FX brand. Pinball M will now be Pinball FX Midnight. Zen Pinball World will be renamed Pinball FX Go. Pinball FX 2 VR will now be Pinball FX Classic VR. So those are your big name changes you need to worry about. And then following that, Pinball FX 3 will be renamed Pinball FX Classic on Steam. But they're going to be handling Pinball FX 3 a little differently on consoles as they're going through some changes there. PlayStation and Nintendo will have their game and DLCs hidden in May, but you'll be able to expand your collection through the in-game shop. But since they can't do that on Xbox and Microsoft Store for technical reasons, Pinball FX 3 game and all DLC will be delisted at the beginning of May for Xbox and Microsoft Store, again, only. The exact date will be shared soon, so if you want these in your collection before they're delisted, keep your eyes on Zen's social media and watch for upcoming sales that they intend to do to help people fill out their collection before they go away.
Nice,
it was also noted in the press release. Yeah, none of these changes will affect game functionality, and online services will be uninterrupted. So a meaty press release from them today. Yeah. Oh,
interesting.
But yeah, that's all I've got.
As all you got. Well, I guess that is it for the news. Still no Jacob. That's fun.
He just got in.
Hey, there's Jacob. About goddamn time. Jacob, what kind of news do you have?
I'm here.
Proud of you.
Thanks. I don't know what's already been discussed.
Everything.
A lot of things.
Yeah. Has anything been discussed? I mean, it's 9:22. I mean, but it does say that you guys have been on for like an hour 22, so yeah. I don't know whether you've actually been talking this whole entire, like, for an hour 22 or.
Maui did about, we're about 26 into the show right now.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So not really.
About 25 minutes or so.
Yeah, and then, it says that long because we started.
And then we recorded early. Aki's review because she has a flight that she might not be able to stick around the whole time for.
I'm actually leaving here very, very soon. Yeah. I have less than 10 minutes.
Don't know when she'll be back again.
And then I was here like an hour before then or something. So
Jacob, do you have any news? That's
how long I've been here.
I'm trying to find any news that I posted on.
All right. Well, while you find that, I'll talk about personal news. I drank beer before the show. It was really good. It was a coffee stout. There you go. There's my news.
Oh.
I've been going through and drinking through the catalog of local beer. There's like a company here in Wisconsin that is like the local beer. And I've been drinking through all the things, and tonight was coffee stout. So I'm trying to buy Jacob some time.
Well, thank you. okay. So the National Video Game Museum got their hands on a Nintendo PlayStation dev kit.
Nifty.
Or prototype.
Interesting.
So that's cool. And now everybody will be able to gaze upon its, you know, beauty. Oh, wait, did somebody just come in? Or did somebody leave? Somebody left. Aki left.
No, yeah, she's here because we have another review and she's going first. Clearly.
Yes. Oh, right. Oh, wait. Oh, so she, like, just bounced to catch her flight?
Fucking idiot. Yes, she left.
The magic of editing can only do so much.
She's the first review, so she didn't leave yet.
Right, of course, of course.
I'm so glad I get to break the mystique.
The feminine mystique. So Arc Raiders was reportedly recording all of your Discord messages. Yay! They've supposedly fixed it and are like, that won't happen again.
We're sorry.
Negoshi Studio is reportedly facing closure after NetEase has pulled Gang of Dragon funding, which really sucks because the creator of Yakuza left, you know, his studio to go do this, and now it looks like it may not get made.
Yeah,
which really sucks because I was really looking forward to that. Battlefield 6 Studios got hit with layoffs.
Yeah,
Bree. I meant to mention that.
You did? Okay.
Yeah.
In case you're super excited about backyard sports coming back, Louisville Slugger has a collection of baseball bats that you can purchase.
They finally announced that's coming to Xbox, right?
Yeah, it's going to come this summer.
Okay, cool. Cause I know the old ports they put out didn't.
The old ones aren't, but the new game that's coming out is coming out to Xbox.
Cool.
WarioWare series director Goro Abe has left Nintendo, but he guarantees he won't stop making experimental games with unconventional mechanics, aka games that
weird
you will
shit.
Hate. Yeah. So there's that, and then we got some movie watch. If somebody wants to hit the button,
it's movie watch. Somebody there,
dumbass. So, apparently a leaked script for the Resident Evil movie that's going to be directed by Zach Krieger was leaked and then removed, which, is leading people to believe that it was, in fact, legit. And it seems that the new Resident Evil movie is going to be a wild ride. So, no spoilers here on that, but a lot of people are excited about this film. And
Zach also has done pretty good work directing horror films, so I trust in him.
Yeah, and, you know, also Whitest Kids You Know. So, yeah. Gallon of PCP.
Slow jerk. Now you fucked up. Now you fucked up.
You have fucked up now.
Now you fucked up.
God, that is like, that is legit my favorite out of all their sketches. All right. Also, an extended unrated cut of the 2006 Silent Hill movie has been found on 35mm. And it is going to be getting scanned, so it will be in a 4K restoration. So, it's at least 8 minutes longer than the cut that we saw in theaters. No other news about it has been released yet. And the last bit of news I have is that the final trailers and movie posters for the Super Mario Galaxy movie have been released, along with all of the different popcorn buckets and drink cups and all that other crap that you can buy at movie theaters. And holy crap, they are really going all in on this.
So I have something to say about that. I did something I don't normally do. I went and I bought a sugar cereal. There is a Galaxy cereal, and it reminded me of a really old cereal called Smurfberry Crunch. It was pretty tasty.
Ooh.
Okay. I don't remember Smurfberry Crunch, but...
Yeah.
Smurfberry
Crunch. It's Smurf cereal.
Yeah.
Oh my God. No way, Joe. Really?
Okay, you have to stop and look things up in the middle of a live recording.
Well, I don't know who made it, and so like I'm trying to
it's
like
old. We just, yeah, we can made by lie. Post.
Well, yeah, I know, but I mean, like, if you say like, oh, it was made by Post or it was made by like Kellogg's, like you can kind of like guess based on like the other crap that they've put out what it probably tasted like. So, I mean, if it's Post, I would figure it tasted like Berry Kix. Right?
I mean, yeah, probably. Wait, very similar.
Actually, I think Kix is General Mills.
But yeah, oh, so
me, I don't know.
It's Blue Raspberry Twix. Trix is what the cereal was. The Super Mario Galaxy.
Nice.
Okay. Like old Trix or like old Trix or like newer.
Why are we getting into the specifics of cereal?
Because, when you're saying that it's based on Trix, that is a very important designation.
I had never eaten Trix before, so Blue Raspberry Trix was my introduction. Yeah, they look like little planetoids in the cereal bowl, and it turns your milk blue. And, yeah.
Okay. I'm less enthused now.
Oh.
General Mills, when they, all right, so Trix, like, keeps going in between, like little spheres and then, like, little fruit shapes, and they keep going back and forth, like, every 10 or so years between the two. And they switched from the fruit shapes to the, like, little spheres back when I was in college, and I hated it because you could eat the fruit-shaped ones without milk. Like, it just didn't need it. But, like, the new one was just dry as crap, and I have
a question. Is Lucky Charms interesting to you?
It's okay.
Super Mario Galaxy also has a tie-in with a strawberry Lucky Charms with melting galactic marshmallows.
I've never really been a big fan of Lucky Charms. Like, it's not bad. If somebody has it, like, if that's the only cereal at somebody's house, I'm not going to bitch. But, like, I'm just not a big marshmallow guy.
Fair.
So, like, it's
moving
fine.
On from cereal.
Yeah. That's all I got.
It was super cereal.
Thank God. Right, that's all you got. Are you ready for reviews?
I guess.
All right. Let's dive into these. All right. First game to talk about is Greedfall, The Dying World, developed by Spiders, published by Nacon, released March 10th on PC for $49.99, 12th on Series X and S, and PS5 for $59.99. Greedfall, The Dying World is a narrative-driven RPG. The story takes you to the far reaches of a vast fantasy world inspired by 17th century Europe. Create your character, appearance, attributes, talents, abilities, then dive into a rich adventure, meeting many allies who will prove vital in overcoming the dangers that await you as you progress. Every choice you make influences the course of events. Every alliance you forge has real consequences, and every decision can change the fate of the world. Aki, what is Greedfall, the Dying World?
It is a sequel to Greedfall. This one is set at a different time period. I assume probably a decade later or something.
17th century.
And I don't know when the first game took place.
Proud of you.
Well, you know, it's been like 3 or 4 years at least since the first game came out. That's not my fault. So none of the characters from the first game are around anymore. And you're making your very own native character, instead of being from one of the other continents. So that's cool. And yeah, you get to choose what sex you are, various characteristics about your race. You can make a whole custom character, which is kind of a pain in the ass to do because it wants to start you off with a pre-gen character, and those can't be edited, so you have to faff about a little to get it to where it can be edited, because there's no button to just be like, create your own custom character from the get-go. It's like, here's a pre-gen, and then you go into the next things to create your character, and it's like, oh, here's all these things, but you can't mess with any of them because you chose a pre-gen. It's like, that's the only option there was, yo. So as you can tell, there are some issues with the game. When you're making your character, you also get to choose some of the ability points that they have, or their skill tree, I guess, to get a couple points into. And basically, you're choosing two different trees at a time. So you have four different trees for different types of weapons. You have archery, magic, heavy weapons, and then dex-based weapons, so like rapiers and daggers and shit. And then there's also four other type of trees, so you're basically getting matched up one of the other four and one of the weapon four. And you get like a starting point in each of them or something like that. And the other ones are like, there's a tree for healing, which is the one I chose, and that's the only reason I remember it, because the other trees I haven't touched.
Jeez.
Hey, healing is actually not all that important, as I've found. and then you start the game, and you find out that you and someone else are both vying for the position of the next up-and-coming sage of this village. And you both are taking your, basically, graduation studies, or whatever you want to call it, and you're sent out to go do a couple things together. And, after that, you have to go do that, and you can find a fuck ton of side quests while doing this, and this is just the opening area. It's insane. I probably put 10-12 hours just in the prologue area, just because there's so much to see and so much to do.
Wow.
It was very nice. So you end up, lots of the natives are obviously against the newcomers to the island because they all kind of, you know, suck a lot of ass. But you also have one of these foreigners living in the village helping teach some of your people stuff. Some of them really don't like him. Some of y'all are for him. Your character is typically more for him because he has uses. Namely, he like teaches you how to read and speak the language of all these foreigners and shit like that. You're tasked originally with figuring out this disease that has started claiming people in the village, and then you're also tasked with figuring out why there's less animals out and about in the surrounding area for you to hunt, because your place is starting to run out of food even. And clearly, it's all blamed on the foreigners, because of course it is. And you go out to go and try and figure out what's going on. It's real nice. And from there, it just starts to expand as you get your new role and you start to get new allies. You end up with, by the end, I think it's like 5 or 6 allies. I obviously have not gotten even half of them quite yet. But yeah, this is a pretty decently long game. They have changed it up from the first game in that they've tried to make this one more tactical. Granted, you don't have to do all the tactical stuff. Even when you're starting the game, it asks you if you want something that's really heavily tactical or something that's very lightly tactical. So they've kind of moved away from the action RPG that it originally was to more of a tactical RPG. So think like Dragon Age, Inquisition, that tactical crap that you could play with.
You can choose between tactical, focused, which you're just focusing on your character and everyone else does what they want, and then like kind of a hybrid middle ground situation. It seems like there's a lot of customizability and a lot of configurations you could do in the game.
There's 3 that you choose from. The tactical one puts you in charge of everything. Yeah. And, you know, it's very much that Inquisition. Oh, here, let's pause and then tell people move here and then tell them to attack these people and then start and they all just go do stuff. You can choose to play that way. Not my thing, so I chose the other way, which still gives you some of that. You can still click a button and go into tactical stuff, but your allies actually start just doing stuff on their own, thank God, because I'm terrible at tactical crap. And yeah, they're pretty useful. None of them have gone down, and they actually damage enemies, so that's nice. Occasionally, they kill things before I finish taking care of what I'm dealing with to go help them, so that's nice. All the experience that you get is shared between everybody. So, you know, everyone at my point is like level 11 or 12 now. And you get to choose what skills and ability buffs and stuff that they get as well as yourself. And yeah, characters do get replaced occasionally. So, like, the people from the prologue do not stay with you forever. What else? There's lots of different ways to deal with stuff, so you don't have to just walk in and start killing everything that's moving, because there's not only a friendliness meter with individuals that are part of your party, there's also faction meters with every faction to see how they view you. So it's a... Every time you're getting like, oh yeah, this set of foreigners really like this, but this other set of foreigners really don't. So you're trying to just keep everything mixed up fairly well so that they don't like want to kill you on sight. So you can still go into their areas and, you know, sell and trade stuff, which is, so that's kind helpful, of important. Yeah. It's kind of iffy right now.
I know you played on an S, so you know we can't expect the top tier performance out of it, but overall did it seem to run reasonably well?
When it's running well. When it decides to stop, it just suddenly just shits itself. Like, as long as you're playing the game, it usually runs pretty well, but you can't, like, just push the pause button and walk away for a bit, because for some reason that fucks everything up.
Might be a memory leak or something.
Probably. It's a known issue on the PC version of it. If you pause it or alt-tab out or just leave it sitting there for, like, 10-15 minutes... it basically locks up, and it's the same for the console version. It locks the hell up. Yeah, and when you go to afterwards, even if you can still move, if you go to save, it won't let you. And it can corrupt saves if you go to save over something, not realizing that it's decided to crap its pants. It'll destroy that save, so now, yay, there you go. I've only lost like 4 or 5 hours to stuff like that. And then eventually, if you leave it long enough, It just, you might turn your character and it may take them like 20, 30 seconds for the character to actually move on screen. It gets bad. Sometimes it is also semi prone to crashing. It's crashed a handful of times for me. I think they do have a memory leak problem, would be my guess. It's something they're trying to fix. Hopefully they figure it the fuck out soon. If you've played the first one, this game isn't currently going to be as long as that one. They only got about, I think it was 40% of what they were planning to get done before this came out. Because this game, as everyone knows, when you're playing games, they have a tendency to be like, oh, version 1.0 is the full release of the game. This went from a 0.3 to being released. So they've stated on Steam of their own volition, yeah, we only got about 40% of the game put in here. They are planning to bring the other 60%. However, they're also planning DLC, so I'm not sure if that 60% is just going to be like DLC, a free update, or if it's going to be made DLC, which is worrisome. So, yeah. When it's playing and you're focused in the game, it runs pretty smoothly. There are some issues here and there, but it's generally really good. It's just if you decide to like, oh, I need to go take a bathroom break, just close the game.
Yeah.
Just save and close. Otherwise, it is so fucked. Occasionally, I had issues like I went into conversations and the sound just stopped. They weren't talking to each other anymore. The text was still there, but they weren't verbalizing it. I also had times when I was in conversations and they were talking and the character models just decided to stop doing anything. So they'd be talking, but then their face would just be staring blankly ahead instead of saying anything. So very minor issues.
Were these all things that happened pre-patch or post-patch? Because I know you said there was a launch day patch, yeah?
I said I think there was a launch day patch. I have no idea.
Oh.
I don't know if there was.
Pay attention to this stuff.
I just play the game.
Look in my recently updated games. Did it have an update? Yes. Let me check what's new.
It doesn't tell you what's new in there, does it?
No, but that's what you go into and look for. You see if problems were fixed.
Too much effort.
No, that is our job.
That's your job. I'm lazy. I review the game.
Exactly. That's your job. You're the one playing it. I don't have it to play it.
I still blame you.
60 bucks on this one. What do you think?
I think for now, it's try it if you liked the first game. If you didn't, this obviously isn't for you. But if you're like, maybe I'll try it out. It's a try it to maybe wait for it to be on sale or for the future for when they've done some more fixes. Right now it's really hard to be like, yes, totally go buy it, which is really sad because I really like the first game. This is one of my indie darlings and it hurts my feelings.
Yeah, I like spiders as a dev. So hopefully this one gets smoothed over and it's on my wish list. So I'll be keeping an eye on it. But that is it for you. I know you have a flight you got to take care of, so get the fuck out of here, I guess.
Yep. See y'all later.
You have any final words?
Fuck airplanes and the currents they rode in on.
All right, moving on. Next game, City Hunter, developed by Sunsoft and Red Art Games, published by Sunsoft and Clouded Leopard Entertainment. Released February 25th, Series X and S, Switch 2, PS5, and PC for $24.99. Released on March 2nd, 1990 as the only official home console game of its kind. This legendary title returns 35 later, now launching worldwide simultaneously with all of the excitement of the original debut. This game is more than just a remake, it's a fusion of nostalgia and newness. With multi-language localization, both longtime fans and new players can enjoy the experience without a language barrier. Jacob, what is City Hunter?
So City Hunter are a couple of action, I'd call them platformers, but that's kind of a loose term for it. But they are action games that I don't know if these were arcade releases or if these were NES releases. They definitely look like NES games. But you're playing as this suave detective character who, you know, goes on these various missions, and there's three different adventures that you could choose from in this game. Pretty much when you play those, it's really just like, what kind of plot do you care about with it? Because in all honesty, the backgrounds look very much the same. They all play very, like, they all play the same. So, if you suck at one, you're going to suck at all three. which I honestly thought I did pretty decently in them. Like, it was clear that I was getting towards the end, on the second one. But pretty much what you just have to do is that you run around these buildings or sometimes open air stuff, and you go inside other buildings or rooms, and you go in them, shoot people, talk to people, sometimes both. And sometimes you'll have to collect items in rooms. Other times people will tell you where an item is or like where your next objective is. Like, oh, this force field is blocking me from going anywhere. Like, but there's no switch. You'll have to go to another room to find like the power supply for it. Sometimes they'll tell you where the power supply is. Other times you're just going to be wandering around aimlessly and you're going to be shooting people the whole entire time. And there really isn't much of like a block. You could like duck. Or like kneel, I should say, to avoid stuff, or you can try to jump it. That's going to have limited success. And I was not able to find any kind of like health things. So it's very much a, like you get one life and as far as like, you just need to get as far as you're going to in this game. So with it, they did preserve like the original, games and like, you know, like the language and stuff like that. But there is also,
they were not NES. They were PC Engine TurboGrafx 16.
Okay. Nifty. My God, what was I saying? Crap. I lost my place. Now that you said that. Changes that they made. Okay, so like they did also updates for the gameplay to hopefully make it easier for modern gamers, which honestly I felt was rather negligible for us, but you know, I appreciate the effort. The games are hard, but they're really enjoyable. Like if you go back, do you remember Dick Tracy on the NES? Yeah. Made by Bandai around like 1990, 91, thereabouts. It plays very similar to that, except for like those weird car bits. Like it plays like the inside of the building spots. So essentially, I guess you could say Castlevania with a gun.
Interesting.
Kind of. So, although I'd liken it more to Dick Tracy. But anywho, yeah, so I think it's a lot of fun. City Hunter hasn't been that big here in the US in terms of anime, as far as I'm aware, for quite some time. So it's nice that like the series is getting new life here. And these are games that like, I think they said like two out of the three never came to the West. So it's cool that they finally get their time to shine.
Very cool.
I liked it.
Something interesting like this is always going to have a little bit of a premium price tag on it. This is $24.99. What do you think of that?
I'm okay with it, to be honest. Like I enjoyed this more than I enjoyed that Space Adventure Cobra game that came out a bit ago. That was about the same price tag, if I remember correctly. This one felt like it was more worth the money.
Cool. All right, let's move on. Next game to talk about is Mirage 7, developed by Drakkar Dev, published by Blowfish Studios. It released March 6th. Yay, Jacob with the 22-month sub. Thanks, buddy.
No problem.
Released March 6th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $19.99. Mirage 7 is a dark fairy tale, a third-person adventure with a unique blend of fantasy and sci-fi. Oh, too bad Aki left. The young Nadira travels the desert with her pet lizard companion Gigi, searching for a lost oasis, or she hopes to find a way to save her sister. Jacob, what is Mirage 7?
So you're playing as this young Arab girl who is on this quest to find this, like, deity who can hopefully bring your young sister back from the dead. And you're traveling with your little lizard friend, who's very cute. And it is very quickly obvious that you are ill prepared for this journey. And like all you really have on you is like a knife, like some health vials, and pretty much your wits. And you like hopefully that nature will guide you on your quest. Sometimes it will. The game will make it very obvious where you're supposed to go, but other times the game really just wants you to explore, which I found kind of nice.
I didn't, mainly because all the areas are just so limited. And instead of like a big open world, this is like set piece after set piece. And they kind of force you to explore to find some items. Like, I would have never found the flint in the one camp area if I didn't hold the lizard view button down and just wander and wander and wander. I think some of the goals are a little obtuse.
Definitely obtuse. The game doesn't really tell you what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, some of the jumping controls can be frustrating at bare minimum.
Combat is like honestly this game's main pain point.
It feels like there wasn't supposed to be combat in the game and they put it in just to have it.
Just so it's there.
Like,
yeah,
this feels honestly, more like an adventure game than a combat action game, and it, I don't know.
I'm wondering if like they were like there was no original combat and it was like all puzzle based and people were like, or testers were like, you're losing us on this. But I mean, I didn't mind the combat because thankfully like the checkpoints are pretty regular and I didn't have to like redo everything all that much. But it never feels like it's hard to tell when you've hit an enemy and when they've hit you. And so I just kept using dodge and like rolling all over the place, like roll slash, roll slash, roll slash, roll slash, like just keep doing that. Later on there's catapults that you can use, which do make that easier, but there are also mazes in this game, which may give some of us some people flashbacks, like water temple kind of stuff. Because the mazes.
I want to see Aki play no this map for the spider cave. She'd lose
like there's no maps. Hopefully, you know, you can find some fireflies to help guide you, like, where the exit is. But otherwise, like, you know, go screw yourself. But I don't know. It reminded me of, like, honestly, more of, like, an Xbox 360 title. Like, kind of reminded me of the 2008 Prince of Persia, where it was just, like, lots of, like, it was more open air and, like, you know, you could figure, like, you could solve this as you want and, you know, run around as you like. I don't know. It reminded me a lot of that, no. But I was digging it.
It wasn't what I thought it was going to be. And that was a disappointment to me.
I mean, okay, that's fair. I thought this was going to be more
of like an open world action game. And it's okay. Very much not that. It is a closed set piece linear puzzle game.
Yeah,
as long as you know that going in, I think it's a good it's kind of clunky, kind of, it's got some jank to it, I guess you could say.
the combat really needs work, but
voice acting honestly, is they could, very hit or miss.
Like, and the, I mean, the like, opening I like
segment
the story.
In the game with the Jeep going around the military base just shooting at the chop. Like, I almost couldn't make it through that intro with how bad some of that voice acting was. It wasn't pretty.
I forgot about that.
It wasn't pretty. $20 on this one. What do you think of Mirage 7?
I liked it. I don't know if I'd say $20 liked it. You might want to wait for a sale, but I liked it enough that I'd say buy it.
I'd go more with a try it on it. It's enjoyable, but I think there's better things you could spend $20 on. I think there's, I don't know, better things this week you could spend $20 on, but that's just me. Next game, Unsealed, The Mare, developed by Gamhalla, published by Perp Games, released March 10th, Series X and S, PS5 and PC, 1999. You play as Vera, caught between dreams and memories. You search for what should have been forgotten. As fragments of your family's tragedy surface, they poison your mind and intertwine with your memories, distorting the dream into something increasingly horrific. In this nightmare, everything feels connected, bound by guilt, sorrow, and something far darker you cannot yet comprehend. Bree, what is Unsealed, The Mare?
This is a horror game. It's filled with jump scares, symbolism, and sticky notes. I learned most of the story from the store page write-up, which never makes me happy. We're Vera. We're trapped in some kind of waking nightmare while we're dealing with trauma. And inside this dark dream, we can use a lighter and a flashlight to find our way through basements and broken bits of remembered houses. And we'll be chased along the way by a creepy lady with an unhinged jaw. If you want the most immersive experience, try headphones. Be prepared for some well-mastered spooky audio and some well-timed jump scares.
If you want to shit yourself, try headphones.
Yeah, yeah. They chose a fun but sometimes hard to read font for the title that they used for all the menus too. I was able to turn on subtitles, and at least that was in a readable normal font. But it was hard to get through some of the menus with their cool scratched looking font. Like, you know, it looked like someone took a key and like scratched it into the side of your car, like bitch or something. But it, yeah, the Unsealed, The Mare. Yeah. It was that kind of scratched font. There are two difficulties, Stalked, which is slightly more forgiving, and Hunted, which is the intended difficulty. I feel like the difficulty is mostly in how driven the AI is to hunt you down and kill you in certain sections where the lady's present. I played on Stalked, which felt pretty forgiving, and I'd like run into the lady and I'd have plenty of time to turn around and run. But she also seemed to appear out of nowhere sometimes, and I still died a fair amount. So thankfully, there's a lot of good checkpoints in the game. The game is split up into three longer chapters. The primary objective is to get through them. I mean, as you're dealing with the trauma memories and the stuff. There are also speedrun achievements for each chapter. Boo. To progress through the chapters, you'll need to open doors by puzzle or finding and burning teddy bears that look like little stuffed foxes, but they call them teddy bears. They look like stuffed foxes. They make cute little noises to help you find them, which is helpful because it's kind of dark in there. But sometimes they're hidden in random locations, making it hard to know where to find them while dodging the creepy lady. Puzzles are solved by environmental clues or letters in the form of sticky notes and other notes that they have just plastered on the wall and glowing wall scrawl. Again, it looks like people have, you know, scrawled in blood or something on the wall a bunch of words that give you hints as to what's going on in the story or what you need to do for the puzzle. Like there's this candle puzzle that's solved by lighting them in the right order based on a note on the wall. It was pretty easy to figure out. As I mentioned earlier, you're armed with a flashlight and a lighter to start. Later on, you get tools like a camera and like, flashlight bulbs you can use to replace when they go out, because they'll actually warn you when the lady's near. And you can switch between them using the bumper buttons, but I couldn't really find a way to turn them off, so they just run out of juice really quick. So in addition to trying to find your way out and solve puzzles and find teddy bears to burn while dodging the lady, you have to find batteries and lighter fluid for your tools. It's kind of a lot to manage early on. You also have the power to observe things in a different light that will sometimes unseal memories that bring whole new areas to explore. It's a little, like, you press the A button and it's like a little shimmery, everything turns shimmery power. But there's like this item that you can reflect on that looks like a floating stove. And when you click on it, like a new part of the basement appears, but it looks like your childhood kitchen. And then you can find the object you need to get out of the room. It was a cool mechanic. And that's the loop of the game, pretty much. You unseal doors by burning foxes, and then you have to search in the dark. You have to solve a puzzle, and then you go back to the dark hallways, find more foxes, and so on. And it gets a little, I don't know, predictable. The jump scares kind of lost their value really quick because I knew what to expect. You'd have like a pipe fall at the right moment. And you kind of could tell sometimes when the lady was coming because she would hum or something. And I found that all the cool elements they pushed together to make a game were less interesting than I'd hoped. I feel like this had a good creepy atmosphere, decent lighting effects, good graphics and audio work, but it was lacking a cohesive story. Like, key gameplay elements were interesting, but I found myself frustrated and stuck a lot trying to find teddies during chase sequences. And I would recommend raising the gamma all the way on this game, even though it's not intended to be played that way, because it was pretty dark with your flashlight or your lighter going on. So, yeah.
Overall, is a $20 game, was it enjoyable? What are your thoughts on this one?
It was kind of a mixed bag for me. It had good parts entwined with a lackluster motivation to play. Like, it didn't spur me on, so I'm going to give this a try. I thought it had some good elements, it just kind of didn't. It didn't deliver the experience I was hoping for. So, yeah, I think it's still worth a play, though.
Alrighty. Next up, Arcade Archives 2 Rave Racer, developed and published by Hamster. This one came out February 25th on Series X and S, Switch 2, PS5 for $16.99. Rave Racer is a racing game released by Namco Limited back in 1995. With dynamic presentation and more exhilarating drift control, this title evolved in every way, becoming a hit that soared past the high expectations set for the third installment in the Ridge Racer series. The diverse soundtrack further pumps up the race, igniting a frenzy that truly lives up to its name, Rave. Jacob, what is going on in Rave Racer?
Well, first off, I'm going to warn you, if you suffer from, if you get seizures and stuff like that from flashing lights, you will want to avoid this game. Holy crap. Especially with the very beginning opening video. There's a whole ton of lights flashing as you try to ogle a woman while also looking at, you know, car models. But yeah, so... In Rave Racer, you're given four different tracks that you could choose from of varying difficulties. Interestingly enough, I thought the intermediate one was easier than the novice one. Did I finish any of them? No, I'm awful. And this game is absolutely brutal with its timer and checkpoints and stuff like that. Anytime you get hit, anytime you like slightly run into a wall, oh man, that is going to knock seconds off of your timer. And does this game forgive you? No, it does not. And so there are so many times I've finished with like halfway through the final lap and it's just like, whoop, nope, too bad. Or like, I'll just scoot right on in to the checkpoint at like 0 seconds. And then it's just like, oh, all right, we'll give you 24. And then I have to like gas my car, like, you know, hit the pedal as quickly as I can, only to, you know, still have it be like, nah, no, you're still not going to make it. Like, unfortunately, like, there's no different car models on it, but it is very much... Honestly, I'd say it's more precision or simulation than arcade title, in my opinion. But like, as I said, like this game is brutal. It is gorgeous to look at. The soundtrack is banging. Like, it is really good. Which I was surprised by, because usually I don't pay attention to the soundtrack in racing games. but this one, like, very makes it clear, like, you are supposed to be listening to it as you're playing, and, like, it was, like, that was a delight to listen to. But I wasn't that familiar with the title, or, like, why, like, because Joe was making a way bigger deal out of this game than I was.
This is, like, apparently this one of never the very first home versions of the game, and
you were saying, like, it hasn't received, like, this is the first port it's ever received, or?
I believe so, one of them, at least. Okay, the home so console it's, port it's was released for the very first time in 2026, after 31 years, as part of the Arcade Archive series.
Okay, so, yeah, so if you've never been able to play this game before, this is, like, your chance. And honestly, it's worth it. I mean, for as brutal as it is, though, like, I never felt like, you know, like, oh, screw this game, I'm done playing. Like, I was like, all right, I could do better next time. Like, and the game was like, no, you can't.
That's the mark of a good arcade game, where they keep drawing you back.
Yeah. So I'm going to keep going. I'm hoping one day I could finally get the... I could beat the novice track.
You won't. Let's talk price on this one. I'm going to guess this used to be a buck a play in the arcade back in 1995. Now in 2026, you could get it at home forever for $16.99. What do you think of that?
I think that's worth it. Like, you definitely get lots of play with this one, even though, like, you know, yeah, you could be like, oh, it's only four tracks. Yeah, but this is a really challenging game, so you're going to be, you're going to get lots of play value out of this. Yeah, I think 16 is great.
All right. Next up, another Arcade Archives game with Plump Pop, developed and published by Hamster, released March 4th. Series X and S, Switch 2, PS5 for $9.99. Plump Pop is an action game released by Taito in 87. The protagonists are a family of plump animals. The parents control a trampoline to launch their child into the air and defeat the enemies above. With two-player simultaneous play, it's a fun experience where two families work together to clear the stages. Jacob, what is Plump Pop?
So while this is not going to get my Game of the Year award, it is easily getting my cutest damn Game of the Year award. Like, this is adorable. Like, I don't know, like, if the target market was, like, young kids on this or something like that, but you are playing as a set of pet parents, and you can choose, I think it's, like, dog, cat, and pig, I believe, are the three choices. I always went with dogs because dog was the cutest. But anyway, so you're just trying to, like, hit these things out of the sky, and what you're doing is that you're catching your kid as, like, they're falling, and then, like, they bounce up off of your like little trampoline, and then, you know, bounce off of other stuff, and the way that they'll bounce off of objects up top is generally like it'll bounce off of one thing and then, like, go to the other side of the screen, bounce off that. If there's something over there, they'll bounce again, you know, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. But you got to be real quick for when, like, the kid is bouncing towards the bottom of the screen. Because holy crap, like, that kid goes real quick, and then, like, they crash on the ground, and then you're like, oh, I'm a terrible parent. Here, because you only get four tries, or three or four tries with it. I think it's four tries, but you only get four tries per play. And each of the different worlds in this is set up in the same way. So, like, the first world, you have to, like, knock out, or sorry, the first level of a world, you'll have to, like, knock out these. Usually it's like balloons or something like that. It's usually just, like, objects out of there. And then the next one is kind of like a puzzle, or not like a puzzle thing, but, like, there's no bad guys on the screen. It's just usually, like, it'll spell out, like, dog or cat or pig, and you just have to knock those objects out. Third one is more of, like, kind of like a game kind of thing, where you have to, like, collect, like, fruits. It's almost like a bonus level. like feeling kind of thing, but the game treats it as like one of the worlds for it. And then the fourth world is actually a boss, which you will have to figure out a way to defeat them. And I thought it was pretty cool because if you bounce, it sounds really bad when you're saying it out loud without like any kind of, you know, knowledge of what I'm talking about to go along with it. Like, so if you bounce your kid off the wall at the right angle, so if you
gotta get a good ricochet,
honestly, if you can get a decent ricochet off of like a short area of the wall and next to like the boss head, because they're all like floating heads for whatever reason, like if you can get like a good ricochet going, like you could beat the boss no problem whatsoever. Other like, and that is honestly detrimental to it because the bosses will spit out like a ton of objects, and then like your kid is going to be more focused on bouncing off of those objects than you being able to aim them over towards the boss. So finding that like, you know, that little quirk is really necessary, like as quick as you can. I made it up to five worlds on this before I called it a day, but oh my God, this game is so damn cute. Like I love this. This is adorable, and I'm glad it's on Xbox.
Very cool. Well, it is a $10 game. What do you think?
Absolutely. This is like, as I said, it's the cutest game that you're going to buy. It's the cutest game that is that's in the Arcade Archives series. Get it.
I hear something that's a bummer.
What?
Two games this week, one Console Archives, one Neo Geo. We don't get either.
Oh.
A Neo Geo game. We have every other Neo Geo game, and we don't get this new one? What?
Which one is it?
God, what? I don't know. I have to pull up the email. You're making me do work here. It was... No, Sonic Wings is the console.
Hop and Bounce.
Hop and Bounce, yeah. Hop and Bounce, March 12th. So it's out. Just not on Xbox. And I was looking at their console archives line coming up. Apparently Rhapsody, the RPG from the PS1, is going to be part of that collection. And the fact that that will not be on Xbox has me, like, borderline furious. That Rhapsody is going to get a re-release, but it won't be on Xbox. Why? I don't know, because this whole console line isn't on Xbox. That is such a massive, massive bummer to me. I don't know why Xbox didn't get this series on their console, or if there's a way to still do it, but if that... if Rhapsody comes out, because you can get it, like, three Rhapsody games are on the Switch through NIS, and I think one of them's on PlayStation, and if this one comes out and it skips Xbox again, I'm going to be so bummed. Like, Limited Run already screwed us on Tomba. I'm tired of missing all these good games. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I wish we were getting them too, but...
Like, I don't understand the reasons. Like, why are we getting some but not all? Why? What is... it doesn't make sense. Maybe it's in
the agreements.
It doesn't make sense. Next game to talk about. Order 13, developed by Cybernetic Walrus, published by Jandusoft. It released March 5th on Series, PS5, and PC for $10.49. You're all alone working at a remote fulfillment center. Your only companion is your cat, a comforting presence in the vast, dark warehouse you're stationed in. Start each shift by reviewing incoming orders as demands increase. Unlock deeper sections of the warehouse and uncover its unsettling secrets. But it's not just your survival. Your cat depends on you. Bree, what is Order 13?
This is a chore-core horror game.
That'd be a chore game?
A chore-core horror. Chore? I don't know what else to call it. Chore? I don't know. That's hard to say.
Chore-core.
Sounds like chud. So yeah, you're a warehouse fulfillment clerk in the darkest and loneliest of warehouses. It's your first day. You live in a small room with a bed, a desk, a kitchenette, your packing workstation, and thankfully you have your best buddy with you, your cat. The first thing you can do on the credit screen is make your cat. You have several options of cat body color. You can put hats on them, and you can name your cat. I chose Dirham this time as my model. Made a cute little black cat buddy for the game. And when you start a new game, you don't really get a tutorial, just a computer screen that reminds you to read the posters on the wall for what to do. I was able to figure it out, but damn, it does not tell you how to do things.
Yeah.
Each day you have a work quota. It starts off fairly small at $75, and I got $29 for my first correct order, so it only takes a few orders to make quota. Next, you have to log into the work computer, pull your first order ticket. In an attempt to make things more tactile, the game has you sometimes hold the trigger button while you drag something like a ticket to the wall. It doesn't tell you that, though. And your order ticket has a shelf code, like WH-B3-6, and then a cube code for the lock. The cube code is a 3x3 grid with squares colored in some kind of pattern. You either have to memorize stuff or take screenshots on your phone. And sometimes the cube code is something easy to memorize, like an L shape. Other times it's more complicated. Thankfully, as you go further in the game, there are tools you can buy to make this process easier. Now that you've got your info, you have to go out into the warehouse. It's dark in there, and it's hard to see. And there are mostly clear aisle markers for you to figure things out. There's columns and rows, so there's column B, and it has three rows. B3 would be the third row, and each row has around 7 stations, so finding B3-7 is not too hard. Sometimes the rows are blocked by pallets and forklifts, and you have to go around things. Once you get to your destination, you have to use the cube code on the keypad to unlock the item that you need to ship, and then carry your box or your toy dinosaur or whatever back to your workstation, navigating the maze of shelves on the way back. Oh, and you have to do this all really quick, because the second you leave the workstation habitat, your cat's happiness meter starts going down.
Hmm.
Oh yeah, and there's a monster out there in the stacks trying to eat you.
Yay.
So to ship something, you have to box it, add protection, in this case foam peanuts, close it, tape it, put a shipping sticker on it, and hit the ship button on the computer. You have a pretty tidy station to do all these things in the right order. Sometimes getting the object in the box is hard because you can't rotate the object in your hand. At best, you can put it down and approach it from a better angle to pick it up with. This portion is pretty tactile, like a little series of mini games to, like, you have to roll the tape onto the box, and you have to slap the sticker on. So, like, the shipping portion is pretty fun, little chore mini game kind of thing. Once you make quota, you can go to bed and end your day, or you can stay awake longer and make more money as long as you still have cat happiness in the bank. So you have to keep the cat happy while you work. There are little things you can buy with your money from the company store to help you work, like scanners and running shoes, and then you can also get cat enrichment items to extend your cat timer. You can feed the cat, upgrade the litter box, get toy mice, stuff like that. Ultimately, you want to find your way out of the warehouse for good, because the quotas always rise and the monster activity gets harder to ignore or dodge without help from spending money, and your cat needs your love. Settings have all kinds of accessibility options, like head bob disabling, streamer mode, disabling scares and the monster, and you can disable cat happiness, which sounds awful without context, and it has invert controls.
Yay!
Yes, the graphics were realistic. I liked the cat moved around the office pod to keep it lively. I loved the cat designs so that you could make it, you know, like one of your cats that you could, you know, change it up. The audio work was well done, so you could tell the direction of the monster and hear all the little groans and whispers while you navigate the warehouse. Honestly, I think the first time, I thought we were just having spooky sounds in the warehouse, right? Like, it was just atmosphere, and I was like, all right, I don't really know what the hook is with the game. So the first time I got attacked with a monster and died, I was a little surprised. The achievement list for this was fun, but challenging. You're likely to play this a few times to get all the achievements. There are ones for completing the game by a certain day, completing it without certain tools, and there was even one Star Wars reference for scanning 66 orders. So this was a weird one, being a mixture of chorecore and horror. The game gets more complex each day, and I felt like I barely grasped things sometimes because, like, there was almost no tutorial. Much like the first day on a job in real life, I guess. I fumbled with things, I made mistakes, tried to balance it while learning what I was supposed to be doing in the first place. I thought this was a really interesting concept for a game. I thought the pace was a little frantic, even though you can take breaks during your day inside your pod, or your office, or whatever you want to call it. One time I logged in to play the game, and it had lost the save info on my cat, not where I was in the game. So I played with an orange cat for a little while, because that's like the default, for backing out to remake my cat and restart my day. Just a little glitch. Yeah, nothing. Like, my save was still there. I was still able to log in on day four. It just didn't have my cat saved for some reason. But overall, I really enjoyed this one.
Very good. It clocks in at 10:49. If you get it in the next couple of days, you could save $2 and get it for $8.39 for $10.50. What do you think?
So if there were clear tutorials on this, I would give it a buy it at that price, like, easily. Missing those, I'm going to give it, like, a high try it. Knowing that there's a sale, like, it's kind of leaning toward a buy it. There were some weird things, like, I had to press every button to figure out how to scroll through the computer store. That was a little frustrating, because it just wasn't the tutorial, it just wasn't there. So I like the game. It's a twist on two genres that made it feel fresh. I just wanted more tutorial, or even, like, a fake corporate video would have been something to, like, get it going. And yeah. I feel like that was just lacking that. So, yeah.
All right. Next up, Vampire Therapist, developed by Little Bat Games, published by Ultimate Games, who were awesome enough to give us a couple extra copies of this that we'll be giving away in the coming episodes. This one released March 5th on Xbox One, Series X and S for $14.99. Guide vampires through centuries of emotional baggage, decades of delusions, and the odd bout of self-loathing with real cognitive behavioral therapy concepts and become a vampire therapist. Even vampires need a shoulder to cry on when a neck to bite just won't do. Jacob and Bree both, you covered this. Jacob, start us off. What is Vampire Therapist?
So Vampire Therapist is a visual novel that uses actual therapy concepts and jargon. However, the game does make it clear this game itself is not a, you know, like, if you actually need to talk to somebody, you should go actually talk to a real therapist, not use this game to, like, self-diagnose and all that kind of stuff. But you play Sam, this guy who is a 200-year-old cowboy, who wants to, like, he's done a lot of thinking over, you know, that 200-year period. I mean, part of it was, like, 90 years just walking around in the forest by himself, which, I mean, that's a lot of time to get some thinking done and, you know, working on yourself. But he comes up with these three ideas that, you know, where if you, God, I forget what the actual, cognitive,
dissonance,
like, he comes up with, like, the high noon, like, it's like a high noon thing, or, like, it's, God, I'm not explaining these well. But, like, he comes up with, like, three theories as to, like, you know, and what kind of situations vampires are putting them in. And you start talking to this one vampire who is like, yeah, like, your offer, like, not like a business, but like a service to other vampires is really intriguing. And you've pretty much, like, figured out what I have, like, in 200 years that took me, like, 3,000 odd years. And you could, like, you could be doing a lot of help for a lot of vampires, because, like, there's a lot of them out there who, like, they've put labels on themselves, you know, and they don't think that they could get any better, because, you know, they view themselves as the same person that they were, like, 120 years ago. You know, or there's other ones who, you know, they need to be able to see, you know, different points of view with it. And also realize just because something happens doesn't mean that, like, you know, that they're a bad person or anything like that. And so you get to talking and you actually start refining more of your ideas. And then eventually you get to start talking to other vampires. And sometimes it's like, there's other stuff to do post game, but like sometimes it's couples, sometimes like there's relationship issues, sometimes it's personal issues. And it's like, this is honestly like a pretty well thought out, visual novel. And on top of it, like there is voice acting in it. And I was really surprised by that. I don't get that many visual novel voice acting, but
I was going to say, it's fully voice acted. Matthew Mercer from Critical Role and various roles like Minsk from, Baldur's Gate 3. He voices two different characters. The game creator, Cyrus Namati, voices several characters, and he voiced some of the characters in like Hades. So he's an experienced voice actor. And through those contacts, other voice actors in the game are also from Hades and Hades 2. I was very impressed with the voice acting.
Yeah. Like I was too. Like the stories that like you go through with these different clients, I mean, it's just like some of them are funny. Like, I mean, there's definitely funny moments in it. Sometimes it's heartbreaking, and like there are times where it's just like even you need to like sit down, like, you know, stop playing, think about like what you've read, and then, you know, like come back to this game like a day later. Like there's a lot of depth that I was not expecting with it.
I feel like there's a lot of good humor in it, though, too. Like, if you've ever seen What We Do in the Shadows or played a Vampire the Masquerade LARP, you have kind of an idea of some of the humor in the game that offsets those dark topics. So, yeah, I thought there was some pretty funny stuff.
Yeah, like, I really liked it.
Well, it's a $15 game. What do you two think?
Absolutely.
Yes, please. Yep.
Yeah. Like, it was already...
Oh, I was just going to say this. I mean, if I had the opportunity to say this joke, this game really sucks your blood, and that makes it a buy it.
It's a bloody good time. Yeah. You'll want to sink your teeth into it.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm going to need therapy after all these jokes.
Yeah, this is on my list of good mental health related games that I keep on TA. I think they did a really good job. I actually have a psychology degree. There's some really good psychological concepts. One of the ones that the main character is like his high noon thinking, and he has these other names for it that are very Western. And they're based on actual cognitive dissonance, like different, or cognitive distortions or whatever you want to call them. But the mentor Andromachos calls them, we call it modernly polarized thinking, which is, you know, generalizing it is to mean like you're thinking only in black and white. And he calls it Nosferatu thinking.
Yes. And also I liked how,
that was just super cute.
I also liked how they threw in clips from the movie.
Yes, watching
in the coffin. I like that.
There was a couple of different clips that they had, like Three Stooges. There was a bunch of old like clips that they had public domain, I think.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
All right.
So well, yes.
Enjoyable game then.
Yes.
Yeah. Very absolutely. Good.
And again, thanks to Ultimate Games, we'll have a couple of copies to give away. We just gave one away in chat a few seconds ago, and Jordan got it. So GG to Jordan. Next up, Hidden Cats in Spooky Village, developed by Newcart Studio, published by Silesia Games. This one out March 11th on Xbox One and Series, 12th on Switch 1 and 2. PS4 and PS5 for $4.99. The Hidden Cats are back to explore the whispers and shadows of the mysterious Spooky Village, find over 1,200 hidden objects across 12 levels, collect special cards, discover real-life kitties shared by our cat community, and so much more. Bree, what's going on in Spooky Village?
A hidden cat game with a spooky theme. I don't even need to do a review. We already know it's a buy it. Seriously, though, I have to tell you about the game in case you've somehow not played one of these cute, relaxing, fun games. In this game, you'll be presented with some adorable hand-drawn art of quirky characters set in a spooky village theme, and you must find hidden cats. That's right, there are cute cats that meow for your attention hidden all over the place, sleeping, hanging from buildings, poking out of trees. But wait, there's more! You'll also need to find some quirky characters called city people. There's one large spooky village scene to start with that colors in as you find all the hidden objects in the area so that you can manage your search better. There are also meows to help guide you in your search and delight you when you succeed at finding cats. My cat is rubbing against my microphone right now. Sorry if that's causing a problem. Inside the big village scene, there's also special cats that unlock achievements and bonus levels. There are also cards you can collect for special cats and landmarks around the village. There are 10 bonus levels in this one, like the Horseman Grove, Den of the Werewolves, the Witch's Market, Frank's Inn. There are smaller scenes where you have to find around 50 to 100 cats and people. And in these scenes, you'll find that the cats hidden, there are cats hidden behind things, not just out in the open. So pieces of terrain will wiggle to let you know that there's something behind them. And finally, when you've completed all the bonus levels, there is one final level called the Crypt that is a bigger style level where you'll have to find a larger number of city people along with cats, but you can only know which city people you're looking for 5 at a time. It's they've changed the format a little of those final levels where it's not quite so grueling. And it's just, you know, enjoyable. There are hints in the game if you need them, but there are achievements for finding all the kitties without using hints. There is a generous zoom function and a dark mode to help save your eyes. The art is great. There's all kinds of spooky, fun-themed stuff like pumpkins and witches and crumbling towers and werewolves. The music is spooky and fun. Two of Joe's cats are in the game.
Yay! I didn't even think I knew about this one.
Someday I'm going to get Teak and Dirham in one of these games. Gosh darn it.
You said it was a Pickle and Petunia?
I think so, yes.
Because I know they had them in another game. I wonder if they just needed cats and they're like, hey, let's reuse them. Fuck it.
Well, I need to get in their Discord and like politely yell at them with a just barrage of cute Teak and Dirham pictures and explain to them how I love their games and them all the time. And they should totally put my cats in their game. But yeah, also with this, in the last hidden game from Newgarts in Silesia, there have been some quality of life updates with their newer titles, like later levels, coloring in, and the coloring in and moving on, moving parts on like cars in the big village scene are individual instead of huge groups. Additionally, you can hide the overlay at the top so you can better see the drawing, to find all the hidden things. So, yeah.
So it's hidden cats.
It is.
And they're in a spooky village.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's $5. What do you think?
I think the price is great. It has gone up a little on Xbox. I think that it is finally like right at that like top end of the price. And I think that they should have been, you know, around this price to begin with because they're great games. And
I think it's on sale for the first week for $4. So,
well, even better. And it's, I think they've had good quality of life updates, and it's absolutely a buy it.
Very good. All right. Finally, we're going to wrap things up with two games from Ocean Media, who also were nice enough to hook us up with extra keys. So we'll be giving those away in coming shows as well. Thank you, Ocean. First up is Teeny Tiny Town, developed by Short Circuit Studio and published by Ocean, released March 2nd, Xbox One and Series for $6.99. Cozy and colorful city building puzzle where every move counts. By merging three matching tiles, you'll gradually transform a humble settlement into a thriving metropolis, growing your world from adorable beginnings to awe-inspiring skylines. No timers, no pressure. You're free to build, relax, and shape your town at your own pace. Jacob and Bree, both, you covered this. Who wants to start?
I can.
Go for it.
All right. This is a casual city builder puzzle game. It has a match three style mechanic where you can merge things to create large cities. You start out with like fairly straightforward tutorial that gives you the basics. And the basics are that you can store up to three objects for later use. You can bulldoze a limited number of objects, and you can use your cursor to place the next random object in sequence while trying to merge 3, 4, or 5 of a kind to make a new structure. It's kind of simple, kind of complicated. You might get 3 bushes together and make a big tree. You might get a few trees together and build a campsite. You put some campsites together, you get lumber, and so on. You get enough lumber, you make a house, you know, stuff like that. There are rocks, rivers, roads, and you can eventually get things turned into houses and even skyscrapers. It's a really simplistic and cozy game. Feels oddly hard to do justice in explaining. It has simple controls that use a combination of cursor and buttons. You can zoom, you can turn your map to make it easier to see. Highlighted objects are pretty easy to see, so you know where you're putting things, and like objects near each other will pulse when they can be combined. You do all this on a grid or a hex map that allows you to place your tiles, and the goal of your grid or map is to get as many points as possible. You do this by getting your objects merged into larger and larger structures, and you'll earn those points along the way. There are a whole bunch of starting scenarios with various sizes of grid, like 4x4, up to 7x7, and the hex maps get even bigger. And the scenarios have different conditions to them, like some have water, some are expandable, and I think there's 25 grid scenarios total. And there are a few other like nuanced things like storage and utilizing and bulldozing and placement bonuses. But ultimately, this is about careful placement strategies. You get small goals as you go up through the puzzles, trying to make a certain amount of points and otherwise enjoy a single looped music track that mostly blends into the background of your chill experience. I like that this had multiple scenarios. I feel like if you've played similar types of games, you'd be able to pick this up easy. If you're new to this game style, it should still be easy enough to pick it up. If you liked games like Subara City, Match Village, Islanders, and even like Preserve or Dolmen Yard, you might enjoy this.
Jacob, your thoughts?
I mean, I thought it was a very simplistic, but interesting take on the Match 3 genre. It didn't exactly do a whole lot for me, but I could see, you know, like there definitely is like an audience for this type of game. It wasn't the worst thing, but Bree covered it pretty well. It's kind of there.
All right. Well, it's $7. What do you two think?
I'd wait for a sale. I'd peg it at like $5 or less.
It's not the best I've ever played in this kind of style of game. I don't want to call it a genre, but I thought it was a decent price. I could give it a buy it.
Cool. Well, if you are on the fence, make sure to hang out and chat, because one of these episodes, there's going to be a code sitting in chat and someone's going to get it. Might be you.
Yay.
Last game is Chronicles of Albion 3, the Vanishing Village Collector's Edition, developed by Circuit Software, published by Ocean Media, released February 16th on Xbox One and Series for $6.99. Gwendolyn, the fairy godmother, returns from a well-earned vacation to find Albion Village is vanished without a trace. Only her age-old castle remains, now a refuge for the displaced townfolk. The culprit? A powerful and mysterious spell that's left behind a wild surge of magical energy. To bring the village back, Gwendolyn must craft mighty counterspells, but the ingredients are very expensive. Roll up your sleeves for a good old-fashioned hidden object adventure. Jacob and Bree, both of you covered this. Jacob, start us off. What is Albion 3?
So, we didn't play the first two, so hopefully I'm able to follow the plot line of this. pretty much you play this, like, old elderly witch lady wizard.
But she was a fairy godmother.
Fairy godmother. Is she? Gwendolyn, the fairy godmother. Yeah. That's the My first bad. Line in the description, Jacob.
All right. Forgive me for not. I told you I didn't know all the lore for this. Okay. If they want to scoot along and send us two, codes for 1 and 2, if those are even on Xbox.
I don't think they're on Xbox. They're not. So shut up.
They're not.
God. So how are we, they're just throwing us right in. Anyway, so yeah, so your town has just like randomly disappeared and you have to like complete all of these like hidden object, you know, scenes, so you can gather up like enough magic points to like bring back, the town in all of its weird ass glory. I mean, like there's a Heroes Guild and a bookshop and like a bar and like, it's just like, it's got like a ton of buildings that it doesn't really feel like this is all that necessary to the plot, but okay, whatever. I was not pleased with the fact that there is no magnifier in this game, and that, like, for longtime listeners, they'll know that that is almost always a deny it right off the bat for me. However, in this one, I will say that the hidden object puzzles were actually not that terrible without the magnifier. Do I still think it needs it? Yes. But like most of the objects were fairly easy to see. It reused a lot of them, which, you know, you could view that as a bad thing that it's constantly reusing assets. But the thing is that you, as you become more familiar with like what this game, you know, says is going to be this object, then you know what to look for. And so despite the fact that there is no magnifier, honestly, I'd give it a try. It.
We didn't even get to that point yet.
I have some things to say
too. Sorry. Yeah.
That's okay.
Jacob's I was like, I just want to get out of here.
No, I was on a roll with my thing. And I, yeah.
Were you on a roll?
Yeah. Sorry.
I want a butter roll. I'm hungry now. Jacob, make me some rolls.
No. I want
Bree, tell us about this while Jacob makes rolls.
All right. So first thing I would point out is that there is a story. Yay. It has voice narration. Yay. The voice acting wasn't bad. Yay. There's like a town of like 450 characters or something. And there's not that many that you encounter. You do have to meet all the characters to get like an achievement or something. I thought the graphics were pretty darn good for a game in this genre. I was a little surprised. I like that it had its own spin on how to do things. You have a number of objects to find on a list. You also have like little extra gems to find for an added challenge. And that is a little bit of a challenge without a magnifier. For sure, because they're really small, but they're bright and they sparkle.
Yeah, so I was gonna say I didn't think finding the gems was that bad. Sorry, you had mentioned, what was the thing that you had talked about right before gems? Because I wanted to interject on something like, okay, don't worry about it. Keep going.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay. When you collect items, they have a gold value assigned to them. So it feels like when you're finding items in the scene, there's a point to it because you're basically like selling those items to get the ingredients to do the magic spell to bring back the different parts of the town. And I thought that that was like great. Instead of just like going through some scene and finding a bunch of random crap, there's actually a reason for finding them this time. Besides just, I need to clean up. In addition to the hidden object puzzle, there's like sliding block puzzles, Sudoku, spot the difference games, gear puzzles, Minesweeper, jigsaws, Picross, knot puzzles, and all of them seemed pretty easy, which was nice. The game had the usual language issues, like asking you to find a stamp. Does that mean a postage stamp? Or the object you put ink on to stamp paper with? The answer is it was both. Or was a bat a baseball bat? Or was it a flying, you know, critter? And then you may also find some archaic or specialized vocabulary. You might find yourself having to look up what the fuck a chamber stick is. for those of you who don't know, it is an old-timey candle holder with the little finger loop at the end, or it has a stick on the end.
I know. You learn things. Like, as I do remember that, and I was just like, and then I like turned to my wife, and I was just like, guess what? I know the difference between a candlestick and a chamber stick.
Yeah, she's and like, it was like totally like obvious. Yeah, and it's totally obvious once you like look it up and you're like, oh yeah, no, that makes total sense. But like outside of that context, what the fuck? And then one time it asked me to find a fedora when the picture was clearly a Stetson, but that was just me nitpicking. Anyway, I actually really like this one.
All right, well, it clocks in at $7. We know Jacob's like, yeah, but Bree, what do you think? You seem to enjoy this one.
I thought this was actually an addictive and fun game. And at this price, I think if you like hidden object puzzle games, you're going to like this one. And if you've never played one and you want to try one and see if you like it at a reasonable price, this is it.
That's very good.
All right. And with
I'm
that,
still we talking about no magnifier.
That's fair.
QQ. Cry more.
Maybe I will.
I know you will. With that, that is the end of this episode. I want to thank everyone for hanging out, keeping us company this episode. Thanks to Aki for being here. Hopefully her flight goes well, and she'll be here on Tuesday as well. We are 1 week away from a birthday episode. That's going to be fun.
You doing that on the Tuesday or the Thursday? Because I think your birthday falls on Wednesday.
Thursday,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
All Grant right. should be here.
Yay!
Yeah, I'm hoping to have a couple good. Of then friends he can join. Discuss the,
then he can discuss the Ball Squad news.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Pinball FX changes.
We talked about that.
All that. Yeah.
Oh, you did? Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's Ball Squad, yeah. Of course.
Well, maybe I want to hear. Maybe I want to hear Grant talk about it.
Well, tough. You're gonna have to listen to our episode to hear our thoughts instead. Much,
yeah. Well, I prefer his voice over you, Joe. I don't have to I don't have to talk to you about what I do when I'm naked.
Music this episode. We'll play something from Grant since we're talking about Grant. How about that?
All right. I like it.
Any final words to end the show?
No.
Nothing?
I was just going to excitedly shout about my new car. Yay, new car. Ooh,
what kind of car is it?
Well, it's not a brand new car. It's just a new to me car. It's a Nissan Rogue.
Nissan Rogue. I don't remember what they look like. Hold on.
Nissan. It's a little less.
I'm ending the show. It's done. Bye.